Welcome to Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region. I'm Stella Fong. In this show, we get a taste of the 16th Annual International Food Fair at MSU Billings, where 11 cuisines from around the world are being showcased. We go to the Rimrock Cafe and Kitchen, where we talk to Dr. Paul Foster, Executive Director of the Office of International Studies, Neil Beyer, the International Marketing and Outreach Specialist, Executive Chef Marlo Sprang, and some of the students cooking up for the event. On this afternoon, before 450 guests enter the Rimrock Cafe to taste food from countries around the world, we first talk to the organizers of this event. Dr. Paul Foster shares how the International Food Fair began.
We are always seeking ways to get our international students connected with the Billings community. One of the reasons our students love Billings so much, a fantastic university, but the people of Billings offer so much support for our students. This gives us one day a year where we can get the community up here on campus. We can get the students preparing and serving their national cuisines to our people. So it's been an event that we've always supported. The 6-7 years, we've always had 30, 35 plus culture student groups on campus. The past couple of years, thanks in large part to Mr. Neil Beyer, it's taken off. The Multicultural Club is a very important club on campus, and this is a fundraiser for them. So it's been going on 16 years, ebbs and starts, and I think now we're in really solid footing for the future.
Neil Beyer joined the Office of International Studies about 5 years ago and has made tremendous efforts in promoting the success of this event.
My role primarily is international marketing outreach, so recruiting international students to come to MSUB, come to Billings, and be students and study at our campus. But a big part of that, in my opinion, is also ensuring that they have a good time at MSUB, have exposure to the community, but also have the opportunity to present their culture to a place that may not have the diversity that some other states have in the U.S. So it was very important to me to try to facilitate these types of opportunities for our international students.
Billings may be off the beaten path, but Dr. Foster shares how in a smaller community, there is more individualized hospitality.
When students arrive here, we pick them up at the airport, but we have friends in our community called the Billings Friendship Families. These are individual members, families in the community that volunteer to be connected to our office. We'll pick up our international students. In January this year, it's 20 below zero. We had students arriving from Malaysia or from the Middle East in shorts and flip-flops. They check them into the dorms, take them shopping. We've introduced the community here. Our students, we like to get them downtown Billings. We show them around the region. We get them to Yellowstone and Red Lodge. They enjoy it, and I think the most important is just that human connection with our local citizens that really enjoy, and they're proud of Montana. And then the opposite direction, we try and create events where the families are coming up to campus, supporting students. We have a big study abroad program in the university. Many of the community members have themselves studied abroad, or their children have studied abroad, and they really understand what it's like to be a long ways away from home and in need of a good meal and a kitchen to cook in and just that warm friendship.
What percentage of the student enrollment are international?
I would say it's less than 3%, 2%. I don't know the exact numbers, but I know my goal is 5%. So as we grow, I really want at least 5% of our students to be international students that bring their cultures here, but their way of life and their understanding and their knowledges and experiences. Billings is changing, as I mentioned, since when I graduated here. It's very diverse. We may not think so, and it depends where you're coming. Neil came from far away, and when he got here, he didn't see the diversity that I saw having grown up here. So we're moving in the right direction, and we have influence from all over the world. But, you know, that's always been the case with Montana. We often overlook the ethnic component in Montana to forget about the native component that goes back 30 generations plus. But, you know, Red Lodge, there are many Serbs and Croats and Macedonians and Finns there and Italians and Germans and Greeks. We're very multi-ethnic. It's not always discussed or doesn't always receive the attention that someone like myself would pay to it.
Neil, as far as recruiting students that come to MSUB, how do you know where to go?
It's a good question. I think it's just a matter of doing research identifying places and regions and countries that have students that would fit well with Montana, students who have interests in the types of programs that we offer, students who would thrive in a smaller community. So our net is wide. We want to really diversify the university. It's not about concentrating on one country or one region, but trying to bring diversity to the campus so that it is a place where we can meet and interact with people from all over the world and learn about different cultures and different ways of life outside of Montana, outside of large countries where we might have familiarity with. You know, it's about bringing people together to learn from each other, and that's the goal. So I wouldn't say we focus on one particular place over another. It's just about trying to bring diversity to Montana and celebrating that.
So how do the students become involved with the International Food Fair?
So we approach the students and we inform them of the opportunity to be a part of this event, and we request that they identify a recipe, a menu item that is popular from their hometown, from their region, from their country. So it's all up to the students. It's become really a student-centered event, which was the goal from the beginning. Previously, I think our office was heavily involved, and we kind of, our employees within the office, our team members would be really involved. But now I think we've been very successful in kind of giving the helm over to our students and allowing them to represent their countries and just move forward on their own and really be a big part of the program. I've learned from previous experiences, so this time I actually got them to sign up on orientation. So they first arrive, the first day they're here, they're signing up, they're filling out their immigration papers, they're doing all that good stuff, and then I pitch this to them, be involved in this amazing event. And I find that it's a good time to do it because they're eager, they're excited, and they want to be a part of the community and be involved.
Not only do the students benefit, but there's ways for members of Billings to be enriched.
It's an opportunity for us to pair one of our international students with a local family. And that family operates as their home away from home, their surrogate family, so to speak. And they provide a resource for that student to support him or her throughout their time here at MSUB. And it's a great opportunity to provide that bridge of culture between our international students and our community members. So it's something we really want to advocate for and get more community members involved in.
Are these students here for the full 4 years or 2 year program, or are they just here for a very short period of time?
So the majority of our international students here are full-time students seeking degrees. There are a smaller number of students who are exchange students who are only here for either a semester or a year. And then we also have short-term summer programs very often with some of our partner universities in Japan and Korea and other parts of the world, in China, where they'll send students for a month at a time during the summer for language ESL courses. And during that time, typically our partner universities want these students in homestay opportunities to stay with community members in their house. So this is another opportunity for the community to get involved if they're interested in having a student stay with them for a month or so. You know, again, a great way to learn about a culture, to teach these students about American Billings, Montana culture.
We can teach the students about our culture here in Montana, but if we don't have the opportunity to travel, we don't have to go far, for culture is here at our doorstep.
What they may be able to do is invite someone else from another part of the world into their home. And while that won't offer the same experience as travel will, I think it will open their minds and allow them exposure to a different culture, a different country, a different way of viewing the world in some way. And I think anytime you're able to do that, I think it's a fantastic opportunity for self-development, growth, and a better understanding of this amazing world we live in.
And instill a curiosity to maybe leave Billings, Montana to just see what is outside.
Yes.
Let's go in the kitchen.
Absolutely. Let's do that.
Instrumental in the success of this event can be attributed to Executive Chef Marlo Sprang, who heads up the food services at MSU Billings. She shares how she is involved.
We start out by deciding which students want to be involved in the food fair, representing which country. And this year we capped it off at 11 different countries that we had. In the beginning, it's just a handful of meetings. I meet with the students and go over their menus that they want to cook. And I have to manage that because sometimes they have grand ideas that we're not able to do.
So do they present their ideas to you?
Yes, they do. And I appreciate that because what it is it might not be the most popular dish from their country, but sometimes it's a dish literally from their hometown, like it was with Germany this year. And they're very proud of the food they bring. So I want it to come from them for sure. But within reason, sometimes we have to scale it back if we're not able to pull it off for 500 people. So it starts out with just the meetings and picking of the items, and then half of the food I have to go online and buy because it's not supplied here in Billings, and that's fun for me. But closer to the day of the event, we set up a lot of different schedules for prep because I cannot have all the students prepping at one time, and I have to have them prepping around our schedule, and I have to have time myself to spend with them in the kitchen. They do start out with a safety meeting. They come to a safety meeting, a PowerPoint presentation, and are walked through the kitchen, and we discuss all the different rules and regulations for the food and for physical safety, which is very important for us.
So are they allotted a specific time, or do they are they just depends on their recipe?
It definitely depends on their recipe. Some people came in and prepped 3 different days event, and other students, say the girl of Korea, she did fried rice. Her prep was pretty simple, so she only had to come one day. But the gentleman from Saudi Arabia with the lamb dish that soaked and marinated, and then they cooked it, and then another country that did handmade noodles, they had a lot of prep ahead of time, so they were here a couple days.
Did you have to help them with some of the prep? Did they all know how to prepare their food?
It's a little bit of both. I do stress in the beginning that, and try to remind them that they are doing the prep. Sometimes they don't understand that they think they're going to show me how to do it or give me their mother's recipe. And so this is the second year we've done that, and we've ran into that a couple times. But I stress, this is you. You don't take on anything you can't handle. Mexico this year did tamales. They made 500 tamales. So I am unable to help them prep because I'm busy with a lot of other things. But it's them 99% of the time. It's all them. So.
Well, it's great that you can give them direction, and working in a large kitchen, I'm sure, is different for them also.
Some of them fit right in, and I try and hire them. Two of my current staff are staff members that were students last year at the International Fair, and they did such a good job in the kitchen that I said, when you're ready for a job, come see me. So I have 2 students that currently work for me that were, you know, shining stars at last year's fair, and I offered another guy a job this year. Some of the people fit right in, and then some of the students really are texting their mom through the whole process to get it right, and we help everybody along.
Come back to the second part to hear from the people Shep Spring and her staff successfully helped to cook up international flavors. Welcome back. In this second part of Flavors Under the Big Sky, we go into the main kitchen at MSU Billings, where we talk to some of the students preparing for the 16th Annual International Food Fair. We first hear from the students from Japan.
My name is Tsukasa Kimishima, and I'm from Japan.
Yeah. And you are?
I'm Kazu Furumoto. I'm also from Japan.
And you guys are making a dish. You're asked to cook for 600 people. Have you cooked for that many people before?
Well, I have participated this event the past 2 times, so I have. But yeah, so that's my experience, kind of.
What did you make the other 2 times?
So last year, we cooked Japanese cooked fried chicken, tons of fried chicken, which is like a small piece of chicken. So it's kind of a little bit different than Americans have. And the 2 years ago, we cooked pork with the gingers. So yeah, it was kind of new to people here. So that's, yeah.
That's great. So what are you making this year?
Oh, this year? We are making gyudon.
It's a beef mixing with onion and a little bit sweeter than you're expecting, kind of. And we put those on top of rice and eat it together. And also, we have some, it's not soup, but it's kind of soup with it. And so that's how we eat it. That's the typical food in Japan.
So in this big, huge container, what is in there?
So in there, we have mirin, a soy sauce, and a little bit of sake, and of course, sugar, because we have to make it sweet. So those are the main things that we put, and water, of course, so. Yeah.
And then are you looking to boil it until it thickens?
We just for now waiting for onions to be cooked, like soft enough. So then we can put our beef into it. and then it'll be ready after that. So,
where did this recipe come from?
Oh, I have no idea. It's so common in Japan.
Because in Japan, there's a fast food, not fast food, but like it's kind of a restaurant, but it's fast food. And it's really cheap and really fast. It's really popular in Japan. It's like everywhere, especially if you go to big city, it's like everywhere. And it tastes good and cheap and fast. So that's why we picked this one. Try to make them experience like Japanese food, what we usually eat.
From Japan, we go to Pakistan to talk to Daniel Saich.
Today, we are making chicken curry. We call it handi with stuffed naan, stuffed bread. So yeah, it's going to be amazing for you all.
And what spices are in the chicken? How is it prepared?
All right, so there's a tradition in Pakistan that we use a lot of spices just to make it more tastier and spicy. So we are crazy about food. All of the Pakistanis are really crazy about the food. So we just add many chilies and, you know, some there are ingredients a lot which contains spices a lot. So yeah, it's going to be a little bit spicy, but it's going to be tasty as well.
What are some of the other ones? You know, aside from hot, what is the base seasoning that you put in your chicken?
Basic spice we use are the dark chili powder and yogurt as well. So we mix them with cumin, black pepper, and a lot of dark chili powder and green chilies. Mix up of green chili, so we marinate them, and that's how we make it more spicy.
So when you were growing up, what were some of your favorite foods that you remember?
My favorite food always would be the biryani. It's a mainstream food back to our country. After that, the thing I'm going to make today, chicken curry, we call it handi. This is my favorite food too.
And to share with the listeners what biryani is, I love it.
So biryani is a rice dish which contains potatoes and chicken. So there's a specific spice we buy it from the store. It's called biryani masala spice. So it's a specific thing we get from the store. Biryani took time to make it because I know for just five people, my mother used to cook biryani for five people and it took 3 to 4 hours to make it. It's a long-term process, but when it is done, everyone gonna eat their fingers as well.
Finger licking good may be the biggest compliment for any dish. From Danielle, we talked to his partner, Manal Kawar, the other representative from Pakistan, about their handi dish.
Oh, this, my mother used to make it back there in Pakistan. It's a very common dish there. So this is her recipe, the one we're trying here. And fingers crossed, I have tasted it. I love it. I hope everybody else does it too.
And is it a recipe that you actually called her and got, or did you bring it with you when you came to the States?
Oh no, I just called her, and then because I did not know at first that we had something like international food fair, so when I got to know about this, I called her, and then she wrote the entire recipe to me, and then here it is. And even when I was cooking, she was on the call and she was instructing me, do this now, do that now. So yeah, she pretty much helped me in everything.
From Manal, we talked to Mohammed Al-Sawat, a business major who participated last year. This year, he is lending a helping hand to Chinese team made up of Annette Zhao, Yalin Li, and Emily Beyer.
I'm just helping my girlfriend and one of the professors here in the university. They decided to choose those two dishes, and I came to help with chopping the vegetables and cut the beef and prepare everything with them. Since last year, I attend to this event and I share to cook, and I have some knowledge and experience in this kitchen. So I came this year to help them and tell them exactly what they need to do and where they can find stuff.
Well, and did you cook much before coming into this kitchen?
Yes, I did. Well, my mom used to teach me when I was a kid until I grow up, so I can cook like Chinese food and Arabic food.
As far as food here, have you missed the food from your home?
Usually I miss my mom cook, but other than that, like anything I like to eat or something I want to eat, I can make it by myself at home.
And can you give me some examples of some of the foods you might miss and you end up cooking?
I can say the most dish I'm missing from my home country is the mendi. And the mendi is usually cooked in different way. So it needs to be under the sand cooking. And it has like specific taste. And it's hard to make it here because I have no area that has sand. And I don't have all the material to do it. But sometimes I can do it in oven, but not as the best as in back home.
So this is a technique of cooking that is heated sand that you use to roast meats and maybe make breads. How does that work? Explain to the listeners.
All right. It's the technique. It starts with digging a hole like 1 meter down, and they put all the wood and everything inside, and they fire it and let it fire like for 6 hours at least. And during this time, the sand will get all the heat. And when it gets heat, they just hang the meat in some steel and they put it in the middle of the hole, not touching the sand, and cover it up from the top and make it let it there to stay between 3 to 4 hours. And when it comes out, it has all the smell from the wood and it's like juicy meat and it's really delicious.
Oh, it sounds really wonderful. A very natural way to cook. Share with the listeners, you know, you come from a very diverse background and you come from two different cultures. Give me an example of a dish that perhaps your mother would make that would integrate the cultures of both, or does she just mainly make Chinese food?
Since my mom's family moved in Saudi Arabia, they tried to develop the Saudi culture. It was hard for them in the beginning, between learning the language and involved in this new society. And by the time when my mom started studying at the university and she finished her doctorate degree, she became like someone important in the university and she started being teaching at the same university. And that gave her a lot of opportunity to learn a lot of things from the Saudi culture. As her kid, I grew up with a Saudi father and Chinese mom. It was kind of difficult because when I hang out with my father family, they do a lot of things I cannot understand. When I go with my mom's side, they do the same. But I got involved with like different families in there, since Saudis, a couple of Saudis, they married like international wives, like from America, from Germany, from China, from other countries. So they have the mixed culture. So we meet them and we hang out a lot with them. And that gives us like wide eyes, so we can see things in different angles, and we open to go and travel a lot and have different food, and we kind of more open-minded.
Our eyes and palate continue to widen as we go from China to Germany to a team made up of Konstantin Schaffler, Thomas Horner, and Frederick Schmidt. All three are from Stuttgart and did not know each other until they arrived here. Frederick tells us about their dish, Linsen and Spätzle, or lentils, sausage, and noodles.
It's kind of a Swabian tradition dish, yeah. We are using different noodles here because we can't make our own noodles here. We use in Germany for this dish, but it should be fine.
Do you know how to make the traditional noodles?
Yeah, we know it, but yeah, we couldn't make it here.
Yeah, it's a lot of work, and for such a huge amount of people, you just can't do it.
And tell me what's in here.
It's bacon, lentils, onions, and carrots, and celery, and a little bit of red wine vinegar.
This German dish is reminiscent of America's hot dogs and chilies. The traditional German noodles, Spätzle, are like small pasta dumplings. We now go talk to Shepherd Johannes from Kenya and Tanzania, who is rowing out an African flatbread called chapati for the Kenyan team.
So you get the dough and add a little bit of sugar and flour and then roll like a snail. And then after that, you just roll it back to a flat cycle shape.
Once Shepherd rolls out the flatbread, they go to Faduma Omar, who is cooking over a hot flat top.
They go onto the grill first without oil, and then once they're a little more darker, you put oil on them and then keep flipping them from side to side.
How do you know when they're done?
You know when you're done when there's like a kind of a crisp brown on the top and like dots spread on the outsides. So, yeah.
And is this a specialty of yours?
It is not, but my friends have taught me in the last hour how to do it, and I've been doing a pretty good job, I think.
You're doing an excellent job. And where are you from, and what are you studying?
I am from Somalia, and I am studying biology.
So what are some of your favorite dishes that you miss from your culture?
My specialties, or our specialties, are sambusa, which are like tortillas wrapped with like meat in the inside, and they're fried, and they're in like a triangle shape, and I really, really miss that.
So what is your team serving up today?
We are serving up a beef stew and these chapatis for everyone.
And who is on your team?
So it's me, Vivian from Kenya, Shepherd from Kenya and Tanzania, and then me.
From Kenya, we now talk to Lizabeth Matriz Dana, who was born in Mexico, but is now an American citizen.
I really wanted to join a group that I can feel a little bit closer to home. So then I heard about the multicultural group and we ended up going, and I was the only Hispanic, the only Mexican girl. So it was really interesting. So they asked me, would you want to represent Mexico? And I was like, yes. But then I wanted to make sure that I could represent both nationalities because I am American. It was really funny because I brought my friend Madison with me and she's white, like full white. And they're like, I'm like, yeah, she's like me, like she's American, but I wanted to make sure that everybody know that I'm Mexican-American, not only Mexican.
And what are you studying here?
I'm doing nursing, and I also want to do a double major. I really want to be a physician's assistant. I do have a lot of kids, and I wanted to kind of show and break that whole ordeal, that traditional Mexican woman that has to stay home and raise the kids.
Oh, good for you. You're just certainly inspiring. All right, tonight you have tamales and you have other things that you are serving up. Share with the listeners what you have for them.
I have a few friends here that are from Billings. They recently just came here. They make tamales from Jalisco, Mexico. They make them weekly. They make 500 tamales weekly. And they were like, hey, Liz, how about if we help you and give you the ingredients to do it? So I ended up doing something more of Jalisco taste. So we made three different ones. Rajas, they're made with fresh cheese and chile serrano, and we make a specific sauce with chile guajillo, and then we have the chicken that we have a special sauce that we use tomatillos for.
And a tamale is made with masa, is it?
Yes.
And you know, then you add a fat. Sometimes it's lard.
Lard.
you tell us what is in it.
It's maseca, lard, that's what it's called. Yeah.
You talked about rajas. Now what are those?
Rajas is because they call it rajas because we cut the serranos in four pieces and we put two in the tamales. That's why it's like a kind of like a sling, kind of like rajas, just to make it more traditional, I guess. But yeah, it is spicy. And then we also did sauce that the girls have an ingredient in that they gave me for, and it's like super spicy, but it's like spicy and sweet and sour all at the same time.
Well, and sometimes when you have the sweet and the balance and the sour, it isn't as hot on your palate.
Yeah.
And you talked about guajillos. What are those?
They're like chile seco. It's like dry chili. Chilies. Yeah.
Like dried peppers.
Yeah. We put it in hot water, and we get that juice out of that chili, and that's what we use to put it in the tamales.
Well, it sounds absolutely delicious. And did you learn how to cook from your family, from your mother, your aunts?
The thing is, like every single Sunday or every single time we all eat together. That's like our tradition. Like family, we all sit together on the table. We make sure that we do grace, and it's like a thing. We all help in the kitchen, and it's like something that gets us together. Food is, in every country, it gets us together.
The International Food Fair brought together many people holding many different cultures. We also thank students such as Mardama Demon and Ankar Anwar from Uyghur for their handmade noodles with lamb. Maggie Ivanova's Bulgarian moussaka and baklava. And Seo Yon Park's South Korean kimchi rice, as well as flavors from India and Saudi Arabia. I especially thank the Chinese team for bringing back memories of my childhood with their cooked chicken. Theme music for Flavors Under the Big Sky is from Parker Brown. Thanks to Ken Siebert for production help. Additional funding has been provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. Thanks to you, listeners, for your support. I'm Stella Fong.